So I guess two things. First of all, in general, just say something about the Suda, which is very precious to me and to everybody who I think participates. I saw a vart from the Shemi Shmuel, who says it about the Suda of Matzah and Kippah. He spoke Matzah and Kippah, and he said that the everything in Yiddishkeit that has a connection has to have a midpoint, a memutza. We spoke about different areas, Torah, Shabbik, Sav, and Torah and Nevi'im has Devarim, Torah, Shabbik, Sav, and Tashbal has the Vilsester, and so on. There's always a midpoint that sort of has a little bit of both. So he says, Sukkis and Yom Kippur are a hemshech. Sukkis is the man simcha of you know, Kaparas Havainis and so on. The Mishkan, like the Gordon says, the Anonim came back. So there has to be a point that has in itself both the Nekuda of Yira and Nekuda of Simcha. And the Suda of Motzi and Kippur has both together. And it's something that's true. There's a sense of Gilu Birada. It's one of the things we're missing, I guess, a sense of we could appreciate a day that is full of Yira, like Yom Kippur, which where a person is very, very involved in Avoda and so on. We also have Yom Tovim that we take it easy, enjoy. But the musik of Gilu Biroda, where a person can sit and have a simcha with a serious overtone to it. He can have a serious suda with a pleasantness, with a simcha to it, and a real simcha shal mitzvah. And this suda has that. It has the tam of both together. It has the tam of the still a Yom Kippurdic atmosphere and besimcha. So that's why it combines two inyanim in a way that really goes together. That's one inyan why the suda is such a precious inyan for us. And it gives a sense of what a real simcha shal mitzvah is, what a Yiddish simcha looks like, the tam Yiddish simcha, and so on. Someone asked me, Menachem asked me about the Aderes Vemuna, the new. He didn't ask about the new improved. He asked about the Aderes Vemuna as is. So the song is a Lubavitch song. It's Chabad. Well, let's put it this way: the words came before Chabad, and the tune is the French anthem, La Marseillaise. And it's put together. That I guess is the Lubavitch aspect of it. They also sing it a lot, Motzi and Kippur. It was sung Motzi and Kippur, and I think the Ruach HaDvarim is Yom Kippur, besides a personal day of Kapara and things of that nature, is also seen as a struggle between Klal Yisrael and Esav. Esav is the one that comes to Mekatrik. Esav is the one the Zohar Kaddish speaks about. From Rosh Hashanah to Yom Kippur, Esav has an upper hand in a certain sense. And on Yom Kippur, Esav gets sent away, and Klal Yisrael remains victorious. That's the Moshe Chazal give about a sword, about the person who's victorious comes out with the sword. And that's a Moshe for Klal Yisrael being Menatzeach of Esav. So it's a very appropriate that on Motzi Yom Kippur, we end with a very triumphant note, in other words, and the words are the words fit it, and the tune fits it. And to me, it expresses very much the ruach of that moment. It also has a very personal note, not this particular tune, but just the nigging and so on. Somebody we were very, very close to, neighbor in a former in a Kar Mishpacha, who, fairly young woman, middle ages, was nifta from cancer, I don't know, probably 10, 12 years ago. And she was an extraordinary woman, very, very isha gdola v'chashuva, mashpia on people. And I heard a friend of her speak about her last days, and she said that this woman struggled in the last school for 10 years. She was sick and no one knew about it. She kept herself very strong and did her curative work and family. And finally she said that she came to her a week before she was nifta, a few weeks before she was nifta, when her last bout, and she basically was upset, and she said, I don't know what the Rebbe Shalom wants from me. You know, I think I've did everything I should, could, and I don't know what he wants from me. And then she came to a week before she was nifta, and she was at peace. And she said, I think the Rebbe Shalom wants me to want what he wants. And that's what he wants from me. And she said, so I took her hand, and we sang a Deres V'Emunah, and with, you know, Ashiv, Ashevach, Natil V'Tiferes, you know, she let go, and you know, I don't know if she was nifted then, but that was it, with that she ended it, and it's very, very powerful, and very, moved me tremendously. And I, just the idea that, you know, it's a nigun that expresses, the words express so much, the being Mamlech HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's why it's a very meaningful nigun, and I think it expresses the ruach of the Sefer Yom in the right way. The nigun we usually start with is Meirachik, and for those who've been here a few times, you've heard some of it in terms of the reason why we sing Meirachik. I'd like to repeat it. I'd like to add some points to it. The Rav Soloveitchik has a mimer. I think it's called Meirachok, maybe, or something along those lines. And he gives a mashal, and he says sometimes you have a very close friend, and it's good, it's wonderful. You like the person, you know, you feel very, very close. It's a good. The emotions are positive. But then the person decides to take leave. And, you know, you take him to the train station, and he gets onto the train. And as you see the train pulling away, that's when your emotions begin to well up. That's the Musig Merochak Hashem Nirali. Sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu seems to us closest when he's moving away. The same way personal learns in yeshiva many years, and he takes it somewhat for granted, he coasts somewhat, he's okay. And then a day comes when the person leaves the yeshiva and he goes through very strong emotional moments, because it's a lot of times in the leaving that you begin to appreciate what you have. It's true about this, the words Meirachok come from the Aftera, the second day, Rosh Hashanah. It's true. This concept of Meirachok Hashem really is true in the world of Aveira as well. Sometimes when a person is learning well and doing good, so things are fine and it's good and wonderful. Sometimes when a person reflects and he sees how empty he is and how things have not been going and so on, and then he pushes forward, sometimes the world of tshuva is a much stronger impetus for doing what's right than when you're doing things that are right. It is of the milus of the Baal Tshuva of the Tzadik Gomor that he has that sense of how empty it feels without it. I had a personal experience. I was on the receiving end of it, where somebody gave me Musa, and Mikol Malanda Iskalti. There was when I was Eishet Torah teaching, there was somebody who had been in yeshiva. I don't know if Eishet Torah, but he'd come to one of the El Samech, Eishet Torah, or whatever. He came with a brother. The brother was one of these people who was just brilliant, and within 2 years, 3 years, he was mainstream in the main yeshiva, and he was a big, you know, he was knacker, did very well. For him, things didn't go that well. He was there a year, year and a half, and he went back to Manhattan, and basically went back to life of, Manhattan. And not the Lower East Side. He did everything called Avasser and plus, and very successful investment banker. And he came back for some reason. I didn't know. I just met him the first time. And I was supposed to set up a schedule for him. So I was working to set a schedule. He didn't like this, he didn't want that, wasn't care for this, he wanted this. it was just going very difficult with him. And it was a long day. I think I was supposed to start scheduled for a lot of people. Whatever it was, I kind of got annoyed. And I said, you know, if you really don't like anything, why'd you come? And he looked me straight in the eyes and said, Rabbi, I assure you, if there would have been one thing worth staying for, I wouldn't have come. And it was kind of shocking because I was sitting, I was always from, so yeah, of course, being from is the best thing, so on and so forth. But someone should tell me that there's nothing else but that. And someone who had everything and looks me straight in the eye and very, very, you know, very strong statement. And I realized maybe sometimes a person who's on the outside sees things a lot better than a person who's on the inside. Merochak Hashem nearly is, I think, a reflection on the day of Tshuva. Yom Kippur, it's a person looked back when we feel, when we reflect on a year that was and all the things that are missing and we don't have, a lot of times we feel drawn to doing what's right because of it. It's the tikkun for a person in the world of whatever he's been lacking. One of the greatest, Tshuva Me'ava means that your sense of lacking is what propels you forward to having. So I think Merochak Hashem Nirli, I think, is the nigun that very much expresses feelings of the day after Yom Kippur. Who's our lead Bal Menag, Rav Ari? We have... Here certainly, but speak a few minutes about it. Just we'll talk a little bit about appreciating it. So, after we finished Avoda, which is extraordinarily powerful, chelik of Musaf, a person thinks back about what it looked like, the glory and everything about it. And one of the things is the Mara Kohen, when the Kohen walked out, what he looked like. I want to translate a little bit, I guess, contemporary a little bit. We've gotten a little bit insensitive to Chochmas HaParzuf. I don't mean the Chochmas HaParzuf, the Sephardi version. I mean Chochmas HaParzuf of seeing a person and getting a sense of Ruchnius. This I heard once from a Talmud of the Mir in Europe, in Poland. He lived in my neighborhood, and he told me that one of the very chashev bachim in the Mir in Europe, Rabbi Yerucham used to shatchen American bachim and German bachim, who were much weaker and much lower madrega learning. He would shatchen them to older younger light, to older bachim, to learn with them one seder, pay them for it. That was the seder yeshiva, and Rabbi Yerucham would. During Seder, he would every so often walk up and down the aisle, and if he stopped near you, it meant he wanted to speak to you, and he calls out this older bacha who's learning with a particular American bacha, and he asks him, how's the bacha doing? He said, fine, good, he's learning okay. And Ruchim looks at him, he says, don't you see that he's lost his Tzelem Alekim? Don't you see that his whole Tzura? And he was shocked. He didn't, you know, he didn't notice anything. And then he made some inquiries, and things were not. There were issues, and whatever. Baruch Hashem, things got fixed. But just looking at a person, so Chassidisha maybe would think of Ruach HaKodesh and things like that. But if a person has a little bit of sensitivity to seeing a person, seeing if what his tzura is like, if the person is fagrop, the person is coarse, the person has a certain edelkeit, the person has a certain ruchnius, certain light in his eyes. It's something that little sensitive. If people would look around the base medrash, like at the end of a day like today, and look at people in their faces for a minute, he sees something. He sees a certain re-emphasis on Tzelem Elokim, certain light in the eyes, a certain shine, something there. Kohen Gadol went lefnai lefnim, and he came out. So that ziv, that he was left with a mark of a person who had been lefnai lefnim, lefnei avaya. And that's why we look back at it. There was a certain high point of watching the person who had been lefnai lefnim. It something reflected off him. And that's what we try to be nizdabik with, and try to get a sense in. So remembering it, it's part of those inyanim that remember the glory of Avoda, and part of inyanim that we sort of missed Avoda. So, Duke.
Thank you.
there's another nigun that I'm going to get the oyvim. You don't need to do it. It's going to come to it. Those who have, like, spend a little bit. We're waiting for the machashev to come. we have here already, but he's got to come and whatever it is, do his thing. I mean, hopefully his guitar also. But the seder of this, I actually once Rav Kreid, I think, showed me a clip of Rav Soloveitchik, Zechon of Racha, when he spoke about the Avodah, and very, very emotional, and said that when a Yid says the Avodah, he loses himself in it. A person who has any sensitivity, any Yiddish sensitivity, any heart, and a little bit understanding, the Avodah, you get transported back in time, and you relive it, and you're part of it. It's extraordinary. The nusach we have extraordinary powerful mitzad, the poetry shabai, and the whole musik, the koyan being mechapa on him and his bias, and Shevet Kahuna, and Klal Yisrael, and so on. And then he says, as it finishes, the sort of the euphoria wears off, and a person also wakes up and he says, you know, This is not reality. I'm not in Beis HaMikdash. There's no Beis HaMikdash, and it's Charev, and we don't have it, and so on and so forth. And a person, you know, all of a sudden he hits ground, and then you have all of these piyutim that say extremely quickly, all about when Beis HaMikdash was there. The first few piyutim go along the lines of when there's somebody there, take a look how wonderful it was, how good it was, how everything thrived, and so on and so forth. Since that's happened, since the Beis HaMikdash has become destroyed, we have nothing, we don't have anything anymore, and so on and so forth. Everything is gone bad and terrible, a few of those. And finally, the last ones are the ones that are all about that, you know, a tikva that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should bring us back again, make us beloved again, and so on and so forth. There's a nigun that came out a few years ago, I think 2 years ago maybe, from Reb Hillel Palei. Reb Hillel Palei is unique in the fact that he's a Talmud Chacham who sits and learns and teaches. One of my sons had him as a Rebbe. And you see it in his plays on Yom Pagris, on Beit Hazman, things like that. He plays an extraordinary Zalchilas, his, we'll hear that also. But this one is really remarkable. The tune is a simple tune. It's the tune of Nachmu Nachmu. It fits, and it's another thing. When you see a tune that fits the words and brings out the beauty of the words, it's like going from black and white to full color. It's incredible. And it's a lesson how much we could enhance our davening with the appropriate type of negin and so on. So, is it, you can play it from there? I don't know. Okay, good. Go. This is not. 1 second. Is it, what? Wait, let. Yeah, to put it through there and accompany, yeah.
Okay, accompany, fine.
We'll start Wednesday.
Start
it again.
Lirot.
Okay.
From the beginning, but I guess he does it again, I think, a second.
Oh.
know that one of his, that's very famous, the Chila, we've heard about many times. It's Pini.
Yeah.
Strong memory associated with this, with the pasuk. Habaria Finkel was the Baal Tfilah, the Baal Musaf in the Mir, from, I don't know, when he was a young man yet, until I guess in the early 60s, when his father became sick, till his Ptira a few years ago. He was an incredible person, Habaria Finkel. He was an Ish Emes. He was Teuchi Gebari, Yorei V'Choreid, and Chovi V'Nechmod. A type of person there's a tzuras adam that's hard to push it to give over. It was a shleimistic person, everything emes, everything good, always with a warm smile, with a lot of chachma. Extraordinary person. He was a Baal Tefillah. There was an incredible Baal Tefillah. In 1979, Reb Chaim Shavitz was nifter. Reb Chaim Shavitz shmuzin meyeshiva, and for about 2 years. There wasn't any kavudik a person. There'd be random people saying occasion some yom repagria a shmuz, and finally, I think 2 years later, my shver decided that he would have alternated weeks: Rav Volba 1 week and Rav Arye Finkel another week. And I still remember Rav Arye Finkel getting up. It was a packed bis medrash, and his first words were La'oda marche leiv, o me'ashem mana loshen. Pause the moment. Then he began his shmuzen, which he said till about 3 years ago, 4 years ago when he was nifta. But it was a very powerful moment. He didn't say more; just said the pasuk and sort of, this is all I can only prepare my heart. And what comes out is that Kadosh Baruch Hu. It's a very, very, it's a very strong moment. I'll upon him maybe another enigma too. Anything. No, I'll do the Guinness Eggers afterwards. But Segois, and again, many of you have heard the story a few times, and be it as it may, I want to just share it. It's a nigun that, the mikra, I picked it to sing Matzah Yom Kippur because I like it a lot. I think it's very meaningful to me. Then later, Rabbi Kramer found it in the Medrash, says that it's talking about Matzah Yom Kippur, actually. So I guess I was mechaven, Baruch Hashem. I actually heard this niggin when I was a young boy. Yet we had these old records. I don't know if anybody knows, except for those who are collectors' items, the records. And one of the first few Yiddish ones, I think it was above, or I don't remember, but had a few interesting ones that were unique. And I'll give you a second on it. I remember my father knew it, or he knew of it, so it was interesting. But I never was able to, it was a niggin. And then I saw the a write-up about it many years later when I was an adult by Chaim Shapiro, and he writes that he was stuck in Siberia and a bunch of places during World War II. You can read his biography. It's in his incredible adventures. And he was stuck in a Siberian labor camp. And one day on Shabbos, he was sent by the commander in his camp to go to a neighboring labor camp to pick up something, whatever it is. So he goes there with the horse he had or whatever. He went there, and he comes in. He gives the delivers. He has to deliver, and he sees an old man, like overgrown with hair, sitting in a corner by a tree, humming zmir, singing zmir, saskinus sedos, and this and that. And he walked by. He tells him good Shabbos. And the person froze, and he kind of made believe to hear him. He started speaking more in Yiddish, this and that. And finally, the person warmed up to him. And he said, this person was a Breslov Hasid. And he had been stuck for, 2 decades in the camp. And the way he survived was, in Russia, they very much appreciate, I don't know if the word is appreciate, but they have a certain awe for like these half crazy monks. Ayn Rasputin, Erich Rasputin, for those who might have studied in a high school. They were these kind of powerful. So he had that aura. He was overgrown. Dafka kept himself overgrown like that. And he would keep to himself and was able to keep Shabbos and so on. But so I heard this subsequent. I heard the story from Chaim Shapiro himself at a Sheva Brachas. And then he let it known to this person that he has tefillin, Chaim Shapiro has tefillin. And this person was ois mensch. He said, I find tefillin and it's on Shabbos. He says, tomorrow morning, the earliest you can put on tefillin is probably 5:30 or whatever it is. I'll be there in your bunk. He said, you're crazy. If you go from your place to my place, they'll shoot you. He said, I'll be there at 5:30 and I want the tefillin. I want to be first online for the tefillin. And he went back to his camp. And sure enough, 5:30 next morning, this person came, put on tefillin with a dveikus that he'd never seen before. And this person told him, as a schar, he'll teach him this niggin. And he told him the niggin. That was the story that I heard from him. I had read it and I heard from him. The words kind of, it's an old dress of a niggin. It's a pasuk shir hashirim. There's a spin on it. The Yiddish puts a certain chassidish spin on it. The words are Guinness egas yirati to desbi ben nachal. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, I went down to the orchard of nuts to see what's grown along the stream. Liris apoch hakefet zermayin to see if the vines have begun to the wine has been, the grapes have begun to grow yet, or the rimonim. Lo yadati nafshi samastim arkabas al nadiv. The two psukim don't really have much to do with each other. Then there's a Yiddish refrain which gives it a different spin. It says, my mother sent us to pick nuts. There's a sort of Kabbalistic input over here. Mother, Eim Abonim Smecha, is a Kabbalistic remez for Shechina. Mama is Rosh HaTevis Melech Malchem Lachim. But it's a term used, Ima is a term used to denote some aspect of the Shechina. So my mother sent me to pick up, to pick nuts. V'hoich is the boim. Look how tall the tree is. V'nidig sein the kinderlach. And how short are the children, how small they are. In other words, it seems like an impossible mission. L'yadati nafshi, I didn't know myself. That's how that Yiddish part goes. In other words, he's giving a spin on the pasuk that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is sending us down to pick nuts. Picking nuts also, all these have very Kabbalistic overtones. A nut has a clip around it, and you take out the seed. It has three clipers, four clipers. It's suffused with a lot of rimazim. But the basic point is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends us down to do something in this world. Sometimes it seems as if the task is beyond us. It's too difficult a task, we don't have what it takes to do it, and I somehow didn't recognize my own koiches. And the story itself kind of brings it out. You couldn't, if you ask a person, imagine that type of mysterious nefesh for mitzvahs, stuck in Siberia and so on, I don't think anybody would think that a human being could do it, and I guess we just don't know what a human being has. So I know this is a niggun that it's something that means very much to me, and try to sing it on Matzah Yom Kippur. So I think many of you might know it already. You can go along with me. El ginase goiz yaradeti yaradeti le'ayis be'yan avachal le'ayis Hapocha hagefen, heinei tzorim hayanim. Hapocha hagefen, heinei tzorim hayanim. Lo yadati nafshi, lo yadati nafshi. hat mir geschickt, Nisalach zu kleiben, Nisalach zu kleiben. Wie hoch ist der Bäum, wie niedrig seine Kinderlach. Wie hoch ist der Bäum, wie niedrig seine Kinderlach. Lo yadati nafshi, lo yadati nafshi. Hat mich geschickt, Nisalach zu kleiben, Nisalach zu kleiben. Wie hoch ist der Bäum, wie niedrig seine Kinderlach. Wie hoch ist der Bäum, wie niedrig seine Kinderlach. Lo yadati nafshi, lo yadati nafshi. Al ginas egoiz yaradeti, yaradeti. Lihirais beibay anabachal, lihirais beibay anabachal. Hapocho hagefen, heinei tzorim oyenim. Hapocho hagefen, heinei tzorim oyenim. Lo yadati nafshi, lo yadati nafshi. Demame hat mich geschickt, Nisalach zu kleiben, Nisalach zu kleiben. Wie hoch ist der Bäum, wie niedrig seine Kinderlach. Wie hoch ist der Bäum, wie niedrig seine Kinderlach. Lo yadati nafshi, lo yadati nafshi. Demame hat mich geschickt, Nisalach zu kleiben, Nisalach zu kleiben. Wie hoch ist der Bäum, wie niedrig seine Kinderlach. Wie hoch ist der Bäum, wie niedrig seine Kinderlach. Lo yadati nafshi, lo yadati nafshi.
Sometimes it's even without going to Siberia, just the person has a tkufa of Remus, Yom Kippur, and Azman, and so on. And, you know, a person never imagines he could be what he went through. And it's a, you know, we don't know ourselves until Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't give us an opportunity and or a test, and the person sees what he comes out with. Bench or Mundingen? Yeah. Ma? Or Mundingen, the bench. What? Yeah, Nick Penny. Thank you. it to me?